I speak to you in the name of God. Amen. After taking a doctorate at Harvard under the distinguished teacher Stephen Jay Gould, Robert Proctor went to Germany on a Fulbright scholarship to study German medical journals from the 1930s and 1940s. From his research, Proctor wrote a book entitled Medicine Under the Nazis, a study of the politics of science. Although stressing the willing complicity of scientists and doctors in attenuating and applying Nazi racial science, Proctor illuminates a chilling Nazi obsession with health. The leading Nazis were health fanatics. The head of the Nazi Physicians League demanded that the German people reduce consumption of meat and fats and eat only natural foods, especially whole grain bread, fruit, and high fiber vegetables. Nazi leaders campaigned and legislated against artificial coloring, preservatives, caffeine, chemical fertilizers, DDT, radiation, asbestos, and heavy metals. Alcohol and tobacco were declared genetic poisons. The Dachau concentration camp became a leading center for the cultivation of herbal medicines. And by the end of the war, the SS controlled 75% of Germany's mineral water production. How that medical establishment could also participate in the politicizing of their science remains trapped in the irrational and monstrous evil of the Nazi era. But we know how science can be politicized in any era, including our own. But how the health fanatics, so correctly concerned with what comes into our bodies from the outside, could screen people for compulsory sterilization, could choose euthanasia candidates, could select victims on the ramp of concentration camps, and could administer each detail of the killings, may never be comprehended. But I wonder what I would have said to those doctors had I been their pastor, had I known of the poison defiling the minds of those carefully nurtured doctors. What might I have said when they came to church, and they did go to church, and heard the words of Jesus, remembered and preserved by the church? There's nothing outside a man which by going into him can defile him, but the things which come out of a man are what defile him. This verse appears in a section of the Gospel of Mark that narrates a controversy over the connection between actions and character. Over 23 verses, the Pharisees are called hypocrites. The disciples of Jesus are condemned for not following the traditions of the elders. An apparent conflict in the early church over ritual purity is aired. But at the heart of the controversy stands religion, with its ancient and persistent struggle to hold together the pure heart and right behavior. Hebrew faith and practice was distinguishable from its ancient competitors by a stirring fusion of heart and hands. It did not so much matter how people worshipped. It did not so much matter how they felt. It did matter how they lived. It mattered so much that Isaiah's voice thundered in judgment, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me." The issues that tumble around in the gospel reading from Mark are still around. They are not unique to the Jews or to the early Christian church. They are issues of human life and community. They are certainly issues of American life and society. As a people, we are ardent moralists. We want to regulate behavior and control what comes in, both substances and ideas. There once was a Connecticut Society for the Suppression of Vice and the Promotion of Good Morals. Swear to God. There was also a Penitent Females Society. I have to say, I searched in vain for a Penitent Males Society. Didn't find it. Although it failed, prohibition was an understandably American experiment. In Lake Worth, Florida, when I was 12, there was a blue law prohibiting spitting on the sidewalk on Sundays. In our own state, there is now a law regulating which ideas can go into students' minds when they study history and which cannot. The belief that we are what we eat, so to speak, is one of our favorites. Alan Bloom argued in The Closing of the American Mind that impoverished and sloppy intellectual fare had produced moral impairment and slipshod character. It's hard to track that necessarily with data, but that's maybe not far from the truth. The intake of drugs, sleazy culture, greed, political lies, and alternate realities has defiled our character and endangered our common life. But we know that our hearts rule sometimes independently of what comes in. One day, years ago, I sat at lunch in the country club in Litchfield, Connecticut, next to a table of beautifully dressed women eating obviously healthy food with perfect manners. And from their lips curled an hour of the vilest anti-Semitism I've ever heard. From within, out of the heart, come wickedness, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a man or a woman. A pure heart and a pure life are rarely achieved, I suspect. But the call of Jesus is to just such a fusion. There are clearly times to worry about the traditions of the elders, the things that go into a person, the rightness of behavior. The great Civil Rights Act of 1964 embodied no illusions about changing white attitudes toward black people, but the law did require behavior that was moral and legal, and that was enough to start. Even so, until hearts are transformed, the law has little power to transform persons. Just imagine the Dachau concentration camp cultivating herbal medicines. Just imagine mannered and polite lunch companions spewing bigotry. Just imagine Christian people washed in baptism, regular in prayer, fed with the bread and wine of Jesus' body and blood, who covet, envy, and slander. We're all there somewhere, sometime. So listen carefully to the charge of Jesus, which is an indictment and a promise and a hope. There is nothing outside a man which by going into him can defile him, but the things which come out of a man are what defile him. Amen.